Would you share with me this reading from the 11th chapter of Acts, beginning with verse 19? They, therefore, that were scattered abroad upon the tribulation that arose about Stephen, traveled as far as Phoenicia and Cyprus and Antioch, speaking the word to none save only to Jews. But there were some of them, men of Cyprus and Cyrene, who, when they were come to Antioch, spoke to the Greeks also, preaching the Lord Jesus. And the hand of the Lord was with them, and a great number that believed turned to the Lord. And the report concerning them came to the ears of the church which was in Jerusalem, and they sent forth Barnabas as far as Antioch, who, when he was come and had seen the grace of God, was glad, and he exhorted them all that with purpose of heart they would cleave to the Lord. When I make trips around the country preaching in gospel meetings, there's a group of people I always know are partners with me every day, every week, every month, wherever I'm going, and that's the group of Christians that meet here. And so there was a special interest and concern when we began helping a young man by the name of Rod Chapman in Glasgow, Scotland, to learn more about the work there, the church there, and this young American who married a Scottish girl while he was in the American Navy, and then came to this country and lived for a while, he and his wife, and then they returned to Scotland, and after a brief time, just a few years, the church there decided they wanted to begin to support a man to work in preaching all the time, and they said to Rod, if you would be willing to do that, if we can find something to supplement what we can do, we'd love to have you do that. It was unusual in that this young man was not planning to preach. He did not study and train for that particular activity in the United States and then try to find some brethren who'd help him go to some distant land to preach the gospel. He came to this by matrimony. And it was unusual because he didn't have the kind of background that ordinarily a young man might have in such work. His parents were members of a very sound church in Yuma, Arizona. He himself grew up in that sort of environment. And now he is the son-in-law of a Scottish couple who are Christians, worshiping with a small church in Glasgow with his wife and now two children. And they say to him, would you preach the gospel? And some churches in Arizona began to help this small church do what they wanted to achieve for themselves. And that, I may tell you, is most unusual, not only all across Europe, but in the British Isles, certainly, that a small group of Christians should say, we want to help support a man preach the gospel in our land, in our country, one who works among us. We want to help that. We want to take that load. And I can tell you that we commend it most highly. So we went, Wilma and I and Mary and Linda Hayden, to Scotland, not 3 weeks ago, I suppose. He took the high road and I took the low road, which means he went by British Air and we went by American Airlines. Oh, maybe it's the other way around. And we wound up together there in this city of about, I'm sure it's more than 2 million now. It was nearly 2 million back in 1968. And more than that, it's the largest, third largest city in the British Isles, and it is the largest of the Scottish cities. It's not the capital of Scotland. That's Edinburgh. But in this city, this young man is preaching and working with a group of disciples, about 22 of them. We went to learn about him, and we went to learn about the church there. Little background. This part of the world is where the men first lived who had considerable influence in this country in the early part of the 19th century in preaching the gospel. It was in Glasgow University, established in 1451, that Thomas Campbell got his education. And it was in the same city that he was trained by some teachers of the Word of God about preaching in the Presbyterian Church, in this case, the Covenanter C. Cedar Presbyterian Church, that had their preacher training program right there in Glasgow. And with that kind of background, he was preaching in Northern Ireland. And his son Alexander was born there, probably about 1790 or thereabout. I'm not just real certain. I didn't have time to check that absolutely. And then in 1807, because of his doctor's advice, he went to the New World. And Alexander and the rest of the family tried to follow the next year, but they had a shipwreck, and so instead of coming on to the United States, he went to school at Glasgow for a year. Started in November, finished the next summer, and that was the extent of his university education. His father had a number of years. And just not too many miles on east, in the city of Edinburgh, a young man who was just 6 years junior to Alexander Campbell, named Walter Scott, went to school. He was a fellow student of the likes of William Carlyle, one of the great Scottish literaries, writers. And from this part of the world, the Industrial Revolution began. It was from Glasgow that the Lusitania was constructed, and it was from Glasgow that the Queen Mary was constructed, and the Queen Elizabeth, and Queen Elizabeth II. It was a great shipbuilding city, and still great industrial city. The smoke belched out over Glasgow and in some measure over Edinburgh and that whole territory, and the buildings in the city are covered with soot. They're dark. Well, they're trying to clean the city up today. But I tell you what that city needs is not a facelift for the buildings. It just needs people having their hearts cleansed by the blood of Christ. They're not fast. They're not swift to take that kind of counsel. There's a lot of established religion in Scotland, as in the whole of England. The Church of England to the south, the Church of Scotland right there in the middle of Scotland, which has its established form tied to the state. It's the form that was given to it by one John Knox, who went down to Switzerland and learned the way to preach the sovereignty of God like John Calvin did it, and he took it back to Scotland and rebelled against the established church and began to preach what he thought ought to be said about that. And now you've got churches that named Church of Scotland that look about as staid and old and crusty and tradition-bound as anything that John Knox fought against when he first began to preach in his day. In that city, Rod has been moving around their little meeting place, which is in a library building now. They don't own a building. And they told us that they really had no plans to get one. They didn't think it would be that productive, given what they wanted to achieve. And so they put other things ahead of that. That doesn't seem to bother them. They meet there every Sunday in this hall that's attached to a library. It's actually in Busby rather than Clarkston, but they used to meet in Clarkston, so it's still the Clarkston Church. And then, during the week, they meet in homes. And he has been circling that meeting place, going round and round with his bag full of correspondence courses and tracts and reading material about the gospel. And he has been letterboxing, as they say, over there, because every house in England has a slot through the door. And you can put anything through that slot that'll fit through. There's no regulation like there is here in the United States. You can't put anything in the mailbox in this country except the U.S. mail, and to do otherwise is a violation of the law. But there you can just slip it through every door slot, and so he does that, and he makes callback on them, and he just took us through one day and showed us, Larry and I, where he had been. He wasn't boasting about it. I think he just wanted it known that he wasn't sitting around doing nothing over there. And his wife told me that he gets out early and starts, does his day's work. He's always diligent to get out and do it. And she was apologizing that sometimes her own needs had been such that she'd called him away from those duties. And she regretted that and tried to do it as little as possible, which gives you some sense of the dedication of this young man. He doesn't have a tremendous background of some sort of formal training, as we might think of it. But I think this much is true of Rod Chapman, that he really desperately wants to serve God, that he's a young man devoid of vanity. In fact, he kept on telling us over there, if there's something you see that I'm not doing or I'm doing wrong, don't you hesitate to tell me. We want to hear about it. And he pled for that. He pled for counsel. If you want to know how desperate he is, he said, if you have tapes of your sermon, send them over here. I'll listen to them. Well, we're going to try to send him some of those. But we're going to try to put in some good ones in addition so that won't be too thin a fare for him. But he's willing, and I've got a list of things that he asked about, and I want to try to help him with. But let me tell you the situation. The reason we made the trip is because that situation over there in Scotland and in the British Isles is not in its entirety ideal. There are three churches in Glasgow. There's the Castle Milk Church, which is the original one. I thought that's an unusual region, but... Then there's the East Kilbride Church, which is the later one, and both of those churches have buildings of their own, and the East Kilbride Church has gotten rather uptown about their practices. They use their building for parties and other sorts of things that just, I think, may be a little difficult to find as a work of the local church in the New Testament, but they're doing that. But the ties between these churches, because in this city of all these hundreds of thousands of people, these few individuals have fought a battle just to establish the gospel there. There are not many, even at best. And in the face of that, here's this young man, largely alone in his convictions about some of these things, who has the task of teaching and instructing those Christians with which he's a part about the dangers facing not the American church. They don't need American problems taken over there, but they've got problems in Scotland that have to be dealt with. And that's exactly the case. It is not possible to go to Europe and to go to the British Isles and begin to judge the situation as you judge it here. In this particular country, brethren have been confronted with certain issues and told, essentially, you're going to have to get on one side or the other here. You're going to have to decide what's right and what's wrong. And your association with us may be dependent upon that fact. In other words, we've gone through, discussed, and rediscussed and thought out all these matters, but those are problems that have not confronted the churches in Europe, the churches of the British Isles, except as they face similar problems that are raised over there. And they have them. And we, both Larry and myself, spoke at length with Rod about that matter. And he recognizes the need for that. And we've urged him to teach. He said he's spoken to these issues, and we urged him to teach prayerfully and methodically and patiently but firmly about these things, because if that is not done, given the situation that exists in Scotland, then that little church in Clarkson will, if they're not made to know and understand why they ought not to go that way from the Word of God, they'll be moving 1 or 2 years or 3 or 4 or 5 or 10 years later, they'll be moving in the same direction, because it was just the way they did it and the way we did it, instead of the way the Lord said do it and the way some people decide they can do it. They were an impressive group in many ways. Hired the high school, room in the high school, to have our 4-day gospel meeting. We had people to come out and hear who were not Christians, and that was encouraging to us. And there were some brethren that came from other churches. And I particularly remember 2 preachers that came from Dunoon, which is the place where the naval installation was before they closed it down. And one of them was a retired naval officer who had come back to preach over there. And he spoke highly. I spoke on the work of the local church, which I thought was important. And he spoke highly of the lesson. And he responded positively during the lesson. But the other young man who came along said to Rod, as he reported, he said, "You know, that was good material, but you know, it'd be dangerous in the wrong hands." That could be dangerous in the wrong hands. I think he thought there might be something there that was making him a little nervous, but he just didn't know that I could possibly be that sort of individual who would do that. But I hope we can continue to encourage in that direction. And I think the elders would just be looking at this thing month by month and seeing how things are going. But if we can achieve this in fellowship with this young man and establish not a beachhead for some party over there, but sound understanding and commitment to Christ, trying to do right so that that can be a bridgehead against the kind of departures we've faced in this country, then that'll be great. That'll be wonderful in this city of all those thousands of people. And, of course, we did see a few things while we were over there. We went to Loch Lomond, and we saw some pretty things. But basically, we stayed busy just doing what needed to be done. I want to say very earnestly that it's a joy to have companions like Larry and Linda going and working in this way. They have shown such interest in the work we're doing in other places. And Larry, as you know, he took me with him at the beginning because I think he wasn't too sure about it. But now he knows he doesn't need me. And so he's out there doing his thing, and that's great because he didn't need me in the first place, but I was a sort of a security blanket, I suppose, because I'd been abroad. He'll tell you this is not the way it is. But anyway, this is my side of the story. And one thing I have to say about our trip to England with them is I nearly scared the living daylights out of them with my driver. I decided I would rent a car, and I thought it was going to be a little bigger than it was, and we virtually had to put it on. It was so small, but we did finally manage, I don't know how, to squeeze the luggage in a little car. But I did decide I'd save money. I thought if we're going to Scotland, then when you're in Scotland, you ought to do as the Scots do. And that is to save money. And so I said, we're going to have a stick shift. Well, you know, the steering wheel's on the right-hand side of the car, and the gear shift is not on the right-hand side. The gear shift's on the left-hand side. So I had done that long years ago in West Africa, but as they would tell you, it took me a little while to get my instincts back. And a few times, I tried to move into the right-hand lane, much to the fear and terror of the people in the car. But the Lord is with those who don't have good sense and cares for them. So we managed to get through without too much difficulty, although I did put the thing on the curb several times while I was down on the left-hand side because I'm not accustomed to watching that side. And I had trouble looking in the rearview mirror because it wasn't in the right place. It should have been over here and I was looking over the right. But we're having fellowship with this good brother, and I want you to know something of the situation, and I want to encourage you, they just long and hunger for letters. As he said, it means so much to get a letter, not just a check, but to get a letter. And Jane, she has her challenges. She's never been a preacher's wife before, and it wasn't what she was planning to do, but she's a good girl, and I think wants to do right. And so they would just, it just means something. If you can develop a personal relationship with them, it will be an additional influence to encourage him to preach what he knows is right, what he's convicted is right, and to encourage those people to grow in the Lord. It would be a great blessing. Now, we did spend another week over there after Larry and Linda had departed and taken their flight down to London and spent a day there and met with the church, the Old Street Church, on Wednesday evening. They had a little problem because the Irish Republican Army is trying to stir up things in London, and so there were reports of bombings here and there during the time we were there, and every now and then there'd be some notice that certain parts of the tube system just weren't going to function at this moment. That certain stations are closed down. You can't get there from here, so you have to figure out how to get around London, which is good if you can use the underground as it's usually functioning. But they had to walk, I think, 3 or 4 miles that night just to get from the tube station that they got off of in order to get to the meeting place, the Old Street Church, and they were with them, and the brethren enjoyed having them there. And then we came down afterward and spent Friday, Saturday, and Sunday preaching in this congregation, which is about, I suppose, 40 or 50 people in attendance, and from all over the world. There were English and Irish, and I don't know if they had any Scottish people down there, but then they had Americans, and they had Ghanaians, and they had Nigerians, and they had East Indians, and they had Filipinos. And that's where the church was first built, from these immigrant people who came in and were responsive to it. But there are some solid people there. Don't have time tonight to tell you everything nearly. But there's a tall young brother who's into his mid to later 30s, I would say. His name is Peter Bentley. I told him that he and I had a lot in common. because the doctor who delivered me a long time ago at my mother's house was named Dr. Bentley. But he's blind. I think was able to see as a young man, but later lost his sight due to a particular inherited condition. And they think that one of the little girls that they have may be suffering from it too. But Peter comes in, he leads singing, he does the teaching and preaching, and you ought to see his songbook. It's a box about this big with the Braille hymns in it. And when he comes to teach the class, of course, he can't bring the whole Bible. He can only have the book that he's going to study from, so he has to be his own concordance. And he manifested his skill because several times after the preaching, he'd come up to me and ask some questions that were not exactly easy. In fact, one time I just had to say, I'll have to think about that, Peter. Give me till tomorrow, and I'll answer you as best I know how. So he's teaching and preaching in the congregation. Then you've got Jeremy Hudson, who married a young American girl, who is working for an American investment firm. Wonderful lad, just fine as he can be. And he also is an able teacher. Then they are supporting a brother there in London whose name just went out of my mind. But I tell you, I'm going to get it again if I can just find my list. Glenn Cambridge. Names are troubling me. Glenn Cambridge, Glenn and Judy Cambridge, both of them British citizens. And so they're supporting him to just do personal evangelism. He's a zealous, earnest young man, and they think in time that he may develop in his skill and his ability so he can really be able to do some successful work over there. Meanwhile, there is a brother, Jim Jonas, who's supported by American Brethren, who works with the congregation, but he doesn't do all the preaching near it. Maybe half, if he's lucky. And the brethren join in, and they all get out and letterbox in London. In fact, they took me with them on Saturday, and we went to several big apartment buildings. And the interesting thing about apartment buildings there that all the doors are facing the outside. They don't have these inner hallways, and it was cold that day. And so we were chasing around up in these tall apartment buildings, and he said, don't look down. So I didn't look down. Anyway, door to door. They'd already letterboxed everything. All this territory letterboxed with invitations to this meeting. And we were going back, eight of us, so we could just knock on the doors and be sure they got the invitation. So we were reinforcing that. And they continue to do that earnestly. Now, I tell you, it's slow, hard work, but they're not a bit discouraged. And bit by bit, they're reaching people. They're touching new people and getting new people. There were people there who were not Christians at the meeting. And if you ever get to Old Street in London, which is on the east side of London, it used to be down on what was called Edifont and Castle. That was the old meeting place. But now they're in a health club that rents them space and allows them to meet there on Sunday. They have 3 hours on Sunday because they don't have a Sunday evening service, so they just get together and have two sermons. When I was there, they used to have Bible class, but when I was there, they dismissed the Bible class. I don't know whether that says anything about the length of my sermon or not, but anyway, I was 20 minutes late because it took us an hour and a half to get from where I was staying to the meeting place, and that's because they had torn everything up and five lanes of traffic going into one on Sunday. They thought that was a good time to take care of the road work, and so that was the difficulty. But wonderful experience there. There is another church in London that would be thought sound. It's a part of the old path going all the way back to the early disciples in London and in England, the Kentish Town Church, and some of them came over. The reason they are conservative is because they didn't listen to the Americans when they got over there with all their newfangled ideas. And I may tell you that the Old Street churches, they just have one cup, one container, I should say, in the Lord's house. Now, it's not a matter of deep conviction with them, but they just thought that might make it easier for some of these other brethren to come easily among them and to have closer ties with them. And then they could teach and study on that, of course, in the course of events. That's the one different thing. Now, a lot of churches in England that wouldn't have many containers like we do, but they have two cups. Nobody seems to see that that might be a problem there if you had two cups instead of just one, but it's just in some ways what they were comfortable with, what they grew up with. And then there's a church on the south side of London at Tunbridge Wells where Derek Daniels, who is the son-in-law of the brother who was such a strong force in the Kentish Town Road Church, old brother Scott, who has died, and he, at the time, by the way, he was in Hungary. He and his wife were in Hungary working, trying to do some good over there, this new effort that's going on. But his children, and he's got, I think, five, six, seven, I don't know how many, but his children, some of his children, they're all grown now. But what a blessing. One little girl, 25 years old, she looked like about 17, her name was Hazel, and she was a bright light. And then there was a son there named Stephen, And he was just a delight to be around. And these children, their faith is strong, and they're a blessing to the churches. And one of the boys, one of the Daniel boys, just moved into a new area, and so they're getting ready to try to start some new congregation in that area. And that's great. And you say, well, how fast will this happen? Well, probably not real fast. But something's going to happen. And people are going to be reached. And the reason they're going to be reached is these people are trying. There are areas where the ground might be more rich and the reception might be greater. If this much effort were put into it, they'd be topping the timbers. I'm confident of it. But the great thing that impresses me about these brethren in countries like that is they are not deterred by the slowness of the pace from getting out and teaching everybody they can. There's a lot of love in these brethren over there. They come all over London. Black and white and all colors in between, loving each other. One brother is from Dominica. And he's a taxi driver. And he owns his taxi. They don't like taxis made out of other kind of cars in London. If you're going to drive a taxi, they want the official vehicle that's made for a taxi. They want that kind of car to be used. So you don't see many other taxis than those. And Brother Robert has bought this very fine looking vehicle, actually. And he carries the brethren around with him when they go to do things, and when they're going out to do some work. Not everybody has access to a car, and he does that, faithful and earnest. He doesn't preach and he doesn't teach, but it's so obvious he loves the Lord and wants to do his part. And so I've promised him I'm going to get Brother Robert's name to him, so when he goes back down to Dominica, there'll be some. And he plans in the course of events to retire and go back home, so it's going to be important for him to be there. He's a zealous student of Scripture. There's one Nigerian boy. Of course, they had one of the young men come to London to be of help to the brother who was having surgery over there. I don't know if any of you remember this or knew about it. There was a brother in Nigeria who needed to have a hip joint replaced, and they couldn't get him to London with any money because they wouldn't let the Nigerians send any money out of the country. The brethren couldn't pay for it because they couldn't send money out of the country, and so they did pay for his air ticket. And some individuals in this country sent some money over there so that the surgery could be paid for. And David, the brother that I've known for a long, long time, came along to be of help with him during the time. They loved David because he, I kind of loved him too, because they said, now we know where David got his eloquence. What do you think about that? Well, that's what I thought about too. I thought not very good taste, but we trained. David, he stayed and lived with us for 2 years. David Karame, who is working in Benin City, in the central part of southern Nigeria. Now, where there was just one little church meeting in an elementary school, they've got about four meeting in there, and some pretty good size in that territory. And so they were glad, and I was glad to see the Nigerian brethren there and talk to them about their homeland, and we visited. And one in particular, Michael Adebowale, was just really impressive, because Michael's right out there working all the time. At the moment, he didn't have a job, but that didn't bother him. He's out there working for the Lord. He figured he'd get another job. And zealous and earnest. And then I'll tell you about one other couple that was there that impressed me, and that was Wayne Gaskins, and he's from Trinidad and Tobago, and he was a nursing student. And he met a girl in the same nursing school named Dondina Gibbs, and she was also from Trinidad and Tobago. In fact, very close to him, almost next door to him then. And they had never met each other in their lives. And they met each other there in that nursing school. Now they're engaged to be married. Both of them Christians. And now he came there as a Christian, but his background wasn't all that sound. But I'll tell you something now. It is. Now, where will these people go after they get through? Go back home, maybe? And these Ghanaian brethren, they had a man in from Ghana that was a friend, an electrical contractor. He's going back to Ghana. He's just in the UK to do business, and they had him at the assembly. People that knew him had him right there listening to the gospel. Who knows what the consequence of this will be, where the gospel will be planted. The church was planted in one West African country because of some airmen from that country stationed down in San Antonio who were met at a roadside park, of all places, at a rest area. And somebody made contact with him, started studying with these fellows, and several of them obeyed the gospel, went back over there and planted the church in Togoland. I mean, it's like Kenya. I mean, that's pen pal situation. Now there are several churches in Kenya as a consequence of that. It ought to thrill us to think that we can be a part of this, and what it ought to do even more than that is we ought to hit this territory.
We ought to hit these houses and hit these people and talk about them, talk about Christ to them. The one great thing about being a Christian, one of the privileges we have, is we've got some answers. They're not answers we've devised. But we have some answers for people. Real answers, concrete answers, true answers. We're not people in the world with questions. We're here with answers to questions that come from God through His Son. And all that's happening in the world, it's exciting to hear about this and to know about this and to think, you know, I'm a part of a family that just sort of stretches around the world. And if you go to London, I'll be able to meet some brethren. If you go up in Scotland, I'll be able to meet some brethren. As time passes, there'll be more churches going on here. And I want to say this to those of you who are sitting in this audience here, some of you young people, and haven't decided what you're going to do with your life. One thing you need to decide, if you haven't already, decide to serve the Lord. That's what takes care of everything else. But one of these days, I hope some of you young people will either be married to preachers or be preaching. And I hope some of you will think about these places where nobody knows. And you could go there and be a part of that. Great report from Czechoslovakia. By the way, when I was in Houston last week, I was there with the parents of Rick Ligon's wife. And I knew that they did not rejoice with their hands in the air when they found out their grandchildren were going to be taken to Slovakia. And I said, I'm a member of the congregation that's doing it. Blessed are the merciful. Well, she is working mightily to have a positive attitude. I think it's kind of tough at the first, but now I can see the effort on her part. She talked to Jim Jonas, who just happened to go through. He wasn't even in London when I went through. And we had to meet each other down in Houston. And he spoke, and he spoke with her about the challenges they had had because of parents having doubts and resistance to the work they were choosing to do. And it just meant a lot to her. It helped her a lot. And I could tell the time of the week was out, she was feeling positive about things. But I told her, I said, it's easy enough for me to talk about this in a positive way. It's not my grandchildren that are going over there. And so I understand. I can identify with that. But you see, somebody's grandchildren have to go because somebody's children have to go. And I tell you something, if you were the lost one or your people that you love were lost, it'd be all right with you if somebody's grandchildren went. It'd be all right with you if somebody's children went. And we need to have that spirit and that attitude. And I think it was theirs. But great things happen. Czechoslovakia, I got a note from a man who's preaching in Czechoslovakia, and they've got four different congregations. They're not large. One just got four people in it. One had attendance about 15. And another one, I'm not sure about the attendance. And of course, in Prague, which is the original congregation, they're going strong. His spirits were high. Encouragement was great. They were having still great response to their efforts in teaching. And we were part of that when the brother that we were supporting was over in Prague. And we're going to be a part of that other section now for some time, and that'll be thrilling.
Well, that was a report I wanted to make.
I thought, you deserve knowing what we're doing because you're a part of it. This is not poetry. How in the wide world would I be doing this? The church here didn't support us over there, any of the four of us. Not this church. Making a trip. But the church here was feeding me all the time I was gone and providing my needs and had a house. So, in a significant way, you provided far more than that. And any other work I'm doing, I mean, you are significant partners in it. And I want to tell you thank you. And I want to try to do something with what you give me that will be truly meaningful. And as you make a sacrifice, I want to make a sacrifice too. Sometimes hard for preachers to find the places where they can sacrifice, but we can do things at our own charges. We don't have to have somebody paying every nickel that we need to do the work of the Lord, and that's good for us. It's good for me. And you've taught me, you have, many of you here, you've taught me how to be more generous and how to be more giving of myself and what God has put in my hands financially, and I'm thankful for that. Let me add this before I close here tonight. Martha Seabridge dying me to tell this. She's already said. Well, I'm dying to tell it. But we've had some great news in recent weeks from the work that Skip is doing in Walton, New York. Well, he's baptized another one. This is the wife of a meat packer. who are friends with the guy who had a flat tire out in front of his house that he taught and converted. And so now this is another one from that flat tire. And he's still driving 4 hours one way to that distant place, upstate New York, to be with this sister who has become a Christian. And this is the part that we want to report to you. That she has said that as a result of letters that were sent to her from members of the congregation here, that it just seemed to her that they're all trying to give her a big hug. And if you were a Christian and the only one still working to try to convert your husband, and out there far removed from anybody else, and somebody driving 4 hours to get to you to be there, and that's so commendable on Skip's part, that means a lot. And I want to tell you something. You have meant a lot to that new convert, to that new Christian. And all I want to say to you is, it's typical of you. Keep it up. I have decided, among other things, that one of the greatest means of reaching lost people is just loving them and showing concern. The mother of one of the members in Glasgow came to services, and that was unusual. And the first night after when she was going out, she said, "You sure have given me a lot to think about." And the next time, she began to comment on how the church there had shown such love toward her. She's a widow. And that struck her. If anything is going to open up the heart of this woman further to let the gospel in, it'll be because she sees this kind of love in people who are telling her about the Lord. And this woman up there in New York, who has been deeply impressed with people, never saw her, but are concerned about her. It may just be the thing that keeps her faithful during these tough, formative, early years of her spiritual life. You're doing good. You're doing a lot of good. Well, we want to do more good. We always want to do more good. And you'll find out that there's a spirit in Christ. We're just not satisfied. Want to do some more? And that's what we'll achieve. And I think that one thing that'll help you want to do more is to know what's already been done through the work that you are doing. Well, I thank you for all that. Now we close these remarks by just simply saying to those in this audience that there are answers for your questions. Like, who am I and why am I here and where am I going? What do I need to do to live my life to the full? What can I do about the problem of guilt? What can I do about the problem of fear and anxiety? And I can tell you that all those problems, and they're tough ones, every last one of them, the answer is wrapped up in Jesus of Nazareth. And I'll tell you why that's true, because the fullness of God is in him. Because he's the Son of God, and because that's been demonstrated many times. Let me just remind you, you've got a lot of questions. And they're built into you. Nobody taught you to ask these questions. You wouldn't have asked these questions if it wasn't in you to ask. And you wouldn't wrestle with this problem of sin if it wasn't in you to wrestle with the problem of doing right. And you wouldn't have wrestled with this problem of dying if it wasn't in you to want to live. If there wasn't a concern in you for that. And you wouldn't have wrestled with the problem of fear if there wasn't something in you that was concerned about forces that were beyond you and that you couldn't deal with. You don't just accept that. There's a need in us that God put in there. But he didn't just put needs in us. I mean, some of it's our own fault, isn't it? That sin part, that guilt part. We did that on our own. But God's, he has the answer to all these things. And you need that. Young person needs to know who he is. Needs to know who she is. The only way you can know that is be a child of God. Then you know who you are. And you know how your life's supposed to be lived. You know how to meet each question, and each crisis, and each crossroad in life. You know the answer. You're given that answer. And I want to say to parents, young parents, appreciated Earl mentioning tonight, the young parents we have struggling to rear their children in a godly way, and sometimes it can get hard, it can get tough. But listen, if you're a Christian, You don't have questions. You have answers. You have answers. You know the way. You know what to teach these children that's true. Not just true now and true tomorrow, but true always. Really true, ultimately true. And so it doesn't make any difference where you are. If you're old, you need that truth. You need to know what's right, and you need to know what life's about, and you need to know what's ahead and how to meet it. And He is the way and the truth and the life, and no man comes to the Father but by Him. But let's just say it this way. We can come to the Father by Him. And we can step into eternity unafraid and perfectly whole, and we can teach other people how to do the same thing. And you can't find any way in the world to live a life any more fully than that. I mean, you've done something. Because it's the way of the Lord. It started in eternity, and it's going to end in eternity. If you're not a Christian tonight and living just in time, and you need to get into this eternal business, you need to get in league with God by finding mercy for your sin and peace for your soul and direction for your life and strength to do what you have to do and to meet every challenge ahead without fear. And we invite you to accept the gospel in faith with a penitent heart and be baptized into Christ this very hour while we're standing and singing.